Quick, what's purple and gold and worth $3 billion, From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Monday, today, the 29th of October. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We will get to the purple and gold question of the day in a little bit, but we are going to take a couple of the dominant themes of the day today as we get going. That would be Wall Street, consumer spending, tariffs, also the ever-important idea of economic growth, and roll them into our lead story. You ready? Here goes. Wall Street was lousy today, in part because of a report that the Trump administration is getting ready to impose taxes on the other half of everything the United States imports from China that we don't already have tariffs on. But, and, we got new figures on consumer spending this morning. We, consumers that is, spent more for the seventh straight month last month. And that, indirectly, I'll admit, gets us to Marketplace's Sabri Benishore and where one imagines things go from here.
With consumers spending more and more and more for the past 7 months without wages ramping up, you might wonder whether some kind of shoe is going
to
drop.
There's no imminent reason to believe that consumer spending is poised for a material slowdown.
James Bonnecker is with economic forecasting firm IHS Market. GDP growth was 3.5% in the third quarter, faster than economists were expecting.
The state of the consumer is pretty much the best it's been in decades. And, you know, that's characterized by low unemployment, rising incomes, and then the tax cuts, of course.
This is despite slow wage growth. Alan Detmeister is an economist at UBS.
We saw decent overall income growth just because people have been putting in more hours. We've been having more people being hired. Even though the wages for individuals have been going up rather modestly, they're starting to pick up more now.
As long as jobs keep getting created, consumer spending should be strong. So what might threaten jobs? Well, tariffs, for one.
Over the next 6 months or so, it's likely that we will see some slowing in employment and income as firms take a wait-and-see attitude on the tariffs, and the tariffs slowly bind on the economy and start raising prices.
Still, Detmeister expects that to be temporary. Some firms will suffer, some will fail, others will adapt. Richard DeKayser is an economist with Wells Fargo & Company. He says there's a threat to employment and spending closer to home.
We've got growing headwinds in the form of higher interest rates. Federal Reserve has raised rates several times over the past few years.
And if those rates continue to go up, that could be a drag on home sales and auto loans next year. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
Once upon a time, IBM stood for International Business Machines. But the company hasn't made any actual machines in years. Since it got rid of its hardware divisions, it's been selling two things to business customers, software and services. And today, the company took another big step in that direction. Big Blue is spending $34 billion to acquire the open source software and cloud computing firm Red Hat. It is the biggest acquisition IBM's ever made, a bet on the big market for cloud computing. Marketplace's Scott Tong has that one.
We all know there are different types of clouds in the sky, right? Stratus clouds are closer to the ground, and cirrus clouds are way up there. Well, clouds for data work the same way. Companies put some info on servers far away, but not all of it. Kim Forrest at Fort Pitt Capital says sometimes you need the info lightning quick.
Who knows where this is over in China, over in Europe, you don't know where the cloud really is. All of that back and forth takes too long. So you have to have stuff close to you, like the guts of your business.
Having some clouds close and some far is called hybrid cloud. That requires the different clouds to talk to one another, and Red Hat makes software to do that. That's a big reason IBM bought the company. Together, Red Hat and IBM hope to take on the big boys in cloud computing, Amazon and Microsoft, says Chris Gardner at Forrester Research.
This is a proactive approach to say, look, we don't want to be in their shadow when it comes to hybrid cloud. We want to be a first-run player.
IBM hasn't been first at much lately. Michael Cusimano at the Sloan School of Management at MIT says Big Blue came late to mobile computing and then the cloud. Now it's trying to catch up.
You know, it's still an important company, but it's not a growth company anymore. It's a shrinking company. The big challenge for the CEO, Ginni Rometty, is to figure out how to grow again.
This is a pricey bet. $34 billion for Red Hat is 63% more than what the market thought the company was worth on Friday. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
As I said, speaking of markets, Wall Street was lousy today. Not as lousy as it could have been, though. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Here's a story about getting what you pay for, or more accurately, getting what you don't pay for. You don't have to spend a lot of time driving around almost anywhere in this country to know that our infrastructure, our roads specifically, are in bad shape. Typically, the money to maintain and sometimes even improve those roads comes from gas taxes. California is one of several states that increased its gas tax not too long ago to get more money to make more repairs. But as often happens with new taxes, not everybody is happy about them, and they have taken to the ballot with the anti-tax Proposition 6 coming to California voters a week from tomorrow. But as Marketplace Jed Kim reports now from the streets of L.A., changes in what kinds of cars are on the road might make the real gas tax difference.
Eli Lippman has brought me to the corner of Venice and Figueroa in downtown L.A. It's next to the convention center,
Staples Center, and I work...
Highway.
Highway, yeah, the 110 freeway right here. You can hear the noises coming through.
Lippman is with the transportation organization called Move LA. He's against Proposition 6 because he says the gas tax is necessary. He points out the mosaics of cracks in the pavement.
You got a couple of big potholes here.
Lippman says the state has a backlog of $130 billion in infrastructure investment in roads and bridges.
And that means we have roads that are less safe, bridges that are less safe, and we aren't investing in the state in the way that we need to.
Last year, California legislators decided to patch that $130 billion hole by raising the state's tax on gasoline from 18 cents a gallon to 30 cents. Almost immediately, a group formed to put forward Proposition 6 to overturn the increase and require all future hikes to be approved by voters rather than legislators. Carl DeMaio is chairman of the Yes on Prop 6 campaign. He blames the poor infrastructure situation on mismanagement.
The politicians have more than enough money to fix the roads. They just keep diverting the money. So we don't need to add the cost of living burdens to working families to fix roads. They should be putting the existing gas tax into roads rather than increasing it.
But even if the gas tax were to stay the same, it wouldn't be able to keep up with the demands. For one thing, these taxes haven't been indexed to inflation. Another reason can be seen directly across that street in downtown LA at a Honda dealership. Its windows advertise hybrids and other fuel-efficient cars. Chris Segura is out on the lot, joking with other salesmen. I ask him how many people come in looking for good mileage.
Most of the time, out of 10 customers, 9 customers, they're coming for the gas efficiency. Of course, they're looking for the saving gas.
And they're finding it. Some vehicles top out at over 50 miles to the gallon.
Before, people maybe had to buy, 5 gallons of gas to go 100 miles. Now maybe they got by 4 gallons of gas.
Asha Weinstein Agrawal researches transportation finance at San Jose State University.
And as a result, they're paying less in gas taxes than they were previously.
Agrawal's group, which received some funding from the new gas tax, estimates that if voters overturn it by approving Prop 6, the state will have $4 to $5 billion less to spend on road repairs every year. And that gap is likely to grow because of the rise of electric vehicles.
Starting maybe 10 years from now, we will need to seriously think about transferring from gas taxes to something else, perhaps a mileage fee.
Eli Lippman with Move LA says the new gas tax is already on its way to making life better for California drivers.
There are 6,500 projects that are currently underway in the state of California because of the money that's coming in from the gasoline tax. And those are projects that weren't happening a year and a half ago.
But not everyone sees that. A few blocks away, Mario Reyes is gassing up his white SUV.
I don't think so, man. These roads are still tore back. You know what I mean? You look right here. These roads are all bumpy, so.
He says he'd probably be in favor of overturning the gas tax increase. Then again, he's not sure he's going to vote at all. In Los Angeles, I'm Jed Kim for Marketplace.
There's news out of Europe today that's not technically a surprise, but it is still a big deal. German Chancellor Angela Merkel says she is going to step down as the leader of her party, the Christian Democratic Union, in December. Her plan at the moment is to stay on as chancellor until her term ends in 2021, but it may be that she won't get to decide because politics. But Germany and Europe without Merkel is going to be something new for a whole lot of people. She has been in power since 2005, and she is the European Union's longest-serving leader. So who do you suppose is going to call the shots when she's gone? Marketplace's Kimberly Adams has that one.
Germany is Europe's largest economy, so when something big happened in the global financial system, Angela Merkel usually had a big say in how to deal with it. Peter Sparding is a fellow at the German Marshall Fund.
She has been the chancellor during the financial crisis, during the euro crisis, so in general, she has steered Germany through some very difficult times.
And in more than a decade as chancellor, she influenced the direction of the European Union, too. Her party is now in political trouble amid a backlash over her immigration policies. But when it comes to the economy, says Alan Wheatley at Chatham House,
I think it would be a mistake to conclude that there's going to be a radical shift in policy, because whoever is the next leader is going to be very much in the center of politics, as Merkel is.
But without Merkel's street cred. So what could change is how Germany interacts with the rest of the European Union.
There are forces that are even more skeptical about, quote unquote, spending German resources to support other European economies than she was.
Sherry Berman teaches European politics at Barnard College. She says if Germany's next leader decides the country shouldn't play that role,
you might have more trouble creating forward momentum for the European economy in the future.
Which may be why Merkel wants to give everyone a couple of years to adjust. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Coming up.
You know, when you hear the basketballs, it's kind of like the heartbeat of the building.
Also kind of like the heartbeat of the business that is the Los Angeles Lakers. But first, let's do the numbers. I was totally expecting the Wawas today. How about that? Dow Industrials off 245 points, just under 1%. But, the blue chips were off 566 at one point. They closed at 24,442. NASDAQ down 116, 1.6%, 7050. S&P 500 down 17, 0.6%, 26.41. Aerospace company Boeing was among the companies that dragged down the markets. Boeing descended 6.5%. Apple was another one, slid 1.8%. We heard from Scott Tsang earlier about IBM's plan to buy open source cloud software company Red Hat. Red Hat up 45%, IBM down 4.1%. Cloud giant Amazon, of which you heard in our opening underwriting up top, down 6.3%. You're listening to Marketplace. Sign up for our daily e-newsletter by October 31st, and you could be in for a Halloween treat. We're giving away 10 Marketplace treat bags filled with some great swag, plus a behind-the-scenes look at what goes into bringing you the program every single day, a rundown that I will sign personally. Subscribe today at Marketplace.org for your chance to win, and good luck.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Took a drive across town last week to the city of El Segundo, just south of the airport. Made pretty good time, which was nice. Anyway, we pulled up in front of a brand new building in a mostly warehouse-looking district.
Good morning. It's nice to have you here.
It's cool to be here, honestly. That's Jeannie Buss. She's the reason we were there. She's the president and CEO of the Los Angeles Lakers.
This is the UCLA Health Training Center, the Lakers training facility.
Mm-hmm. It is a nice, nice building, as befits a sports franchise worth more than $3 billion. But the Lakers are more than just a basketball team, right? They are a global brand and one of the great teams in NBA history, although not recently and not really this season yet, but more about that in a minute. Fundamentally, the Lakers are, and this is the way Jeannie's dad, longtime owner of the team, Jerry Buss, would have wanted it. They're an entertainment company with outsized influence. But you got to deliver on the court, and lately, as I said, the Lakers haven't. So Jeannie Buss went after, and she got this past offseason, LeBron James, the best basketball player in the world right now, and she brought him to this building. There is tons of natural light, clean, modern lines. Also, a whole lot of purple and gold, all with the business of basketball firmly in mind.
We moved here just over a year ago. We had outgrown our other training facility, which is just a couple blocks away, and our entire revenue generating arm was in a building across a parking lot. So we were a very divided company.
So this was, as we sit here overlooking basketball courts, and I mean, there's like three basketball courts out there, whatever it is.
Yes. This
was a strategic investment for the company.
Yes, yes. The architects that we ended up choosing talked about how architecture could change culture in an organization. And that was, you know, exactly what we were looking to do. Back in 2012, we had a player by the name of Dwight Howard that played on the Lakers. And we were at our old facility. He came up to my office and he said, "Can I ask you something?" And I said, "Sure." And he goes, "Where are all the people that work here?"
Wow.
And it was then I realized that it was important for them to know how we operate behind the scenes. And so this building is a walkable building. There's no barriers that you can make a full circle without having to divert through anything or being stopped and backtrack. Right.
So let's go. We'll follow you. So I'm serious. We're going to walk and talk. So
okay. Right. So follow me.
Will do.
This way. And as you notice, we have, I think, six or seven conference rooms.
Yeah.
This one is called 2010. You can see the address on the front there.
For the last championship season,
yes,
right?
Yes. Okay. So each.
So when's the next championship season conference room? That's what I'm saying.
That's what I'd like to know. That's the $1 million question.
When the Lakers are in town, is it busier around here? I mean, granted, it's only 9 o'clock in the morning, but...
Yes, when the Lakers are here, this would be when they would normally practice. Oh, right here is our G League coaching staff as they get ready for practice.
G League is the development league, right?
The South Bay Lakers is our team that we use to develop our draft picks, you know, bring in free agents that weren't drafted.
Yeah.
I'll take you in here to the war room. Good morning.
Oh, yeah.
This is like where the draft is held. And, you know,
so we should say there are 1, 2, 3, 4, at least 4 or 5 like 90-inch television screens,
yes.
All of which are showing basketball or ESPN.
Of course.
And you can hear the basketballs too.
Yes.
Because that's a G League practice.
The way that the building is designed is the basketball courts are at the center of the building. And when you hear the basketballs, it's kind of like the heartbeat of the building.
Oh, that's great.
And so now we're walking as if...
Oh, so there you go.
You know, we are one of the players.
Right.
So
there's weight rooms and training rooms.
Right. That's
courts are over there.
The beautiful weight room.
Yeah, no joke. So this is a big, boomy space to start asking questions, but I'm going to because it's like this is the heart of the place, right? This is where the rubber meets the road. So what keeps you up at night then, right? What's your worst nightmare?
The thing that keeps me up right now is that the greatest player in the NBA, LeBron James, decided to come join us and be part of what we're building. And we've missed the playoffs every year for 5 years. So this is not what the brand was meant to be, and that's what our fans deserve to be back to what they're used to in terms of Lakers basketball. Having the best player has brought us back. It's elevated the brand. Now we just need to do that on the court.
I don't necessarily expect you to answer this question, but I kind of have to ask. Have you and LeBron and Luke Walton, your coach, and Magic Johnson, the director of basketball, and you know, Kobe and the other basketball greats, have you guys had the conversation among yourselves about, look, this season we're kind of be rebuilding?
Yes. I mean, Magic definitely has a plan as to what we're doing. You know, when Magic came in and took over basketball operations, what I felt was, and why I had to make the change from our existing general manager and my brother, Jim, who oversaw basketball, was that there was no identity of Laker basketball.
Which is really interesting because Laker basketball is like a brand name.
Exactly. And you can't establish anything when you're changing coaches every 18 months. So we'd had 3 coaches in 3 years, you know, and each one a great coach in himself, but you can't change a roster overnight. And so everything was not matched up right, and we were struggling and with no identity.
So this goes to something we see on Marketplace all the time, right? You were in uncertainty, mm-hmm. and not only does regular business hate uncertainty, so too does the sports business and sports teams and the woman running this sports team. Right? Uncertainty was killing you.
It was killing the brand. And it was, you know, when my father passed away, then Commissioner David Stern called me and he said, Jeannie, don't let the team fail. Like, don't
no
run
pressure.
It into the ground.
Did he and, really say that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my
you
God.
Know, like, it would break your dad's heart. And so, you know, and it was difficult because I wasn't in charge of basketball. My brother was.
Right.
And I asked him, how long is it going to take you to get the team on track? And he gave himself a timeline, which as time went on, I realized it wasn't going to happen. And that's why I had to make the change that I did. But I, you know, I took that to heart and I wouldn't let this... You know, my dad had six kids.
Yep.
I think the Lakers were his favorite kid, really, when people ask me.
a word here about your family, right? I mean, Dr. Buss, your dad, Jimmy, your brother, who you worked with and then had to replace. You talk a lot. You talked about it in your book. Mm-hmm. You've talked about it in interviews, about how this is a family business.
Mm-hmm.
So those first couple of years, mm-hmm. when the commissioner of the league calls you and says, don't blow it with the family business, and then you have to fire your brother, mm-hmm. what's that like?
It was very, very difficult. You know, my dad kind of set it up for us, but ultimately he gave me the authority and mm-hmm. the power to make any changes that I saw necessary. One of the key components of that decision-making process was a conversation I had with Kobe Bryant. He said, what a player... an all-star player who's, you know, a free agent
yeah.
is going to look at an organization and how it operates and making sure that there's somebody in charge who has authority to accomplish what the goals are. Meaning you've got to get the organization in the right position before anybody will consider investing his career in what you're doing. Right now, nobody knows what you guys stand for.
So here comes the poke in the eye question about making the change from prior management and your brother. You said you waited a number of years. Did you wait too long?
That was like my first comment publicly was I apologize to Laker fans because perhaps I did wait too long. As you can hear the music starting.
Going. That's great.
It's funny because we actually have a DJ now on staff.
No.
Because it's like these young players, they're used to multitasking, they're used to having music while they're doing whatever. Let me show you.
Yeah, lead us out of here and then we'll get out of your hair. It's good, you know your way around. I don't have to go the wrong way.
Okay, this is my office.
Uh-huh. One, two, three,
I mean,
four.
Actually, this is the trophy room. I just happen
just
to
happen
have my
office.
Desk in here. And so...
I will never again be this close to an NBA championship trophy. Let me just tell you that. That's cool. 87, 88, 2000,
The reason, you know, it was important the trophies were displayed so that the players could see them. This is the inspiration.
Right, and we overlook the court. And if they look up here, they will see these trophies hanging around.
Now, here's a great feature... Well, for me, is that
quick exit? What? Oh, look at that! You can come watch practice.
We have the balcony to watch practice.
This is nice, right?
Yeah,
come out here and just kind of watch, do some paperwork.
Yep, that's the war room.
Oh,
so,
sure. That we were in the conference
room.
Okay.
So I have this kind of
you
know, back way to get into the basketball operations.
This is a really good snapshot of you being able to run the empire, right? From your office to the courts
right.
to the war room, right?
Right. And, you know, again, going back to players wanting to know who's standing with them, who's behind them.
Totally.
You know, so it's
totally.
We're all together in this.
That's awesome. That is great. Listen, I want to get out of your hair. Thank you so much.
Thank
I really
you.
Appreciate it.
You.
You were very generous with your time. We got the grand tour from the woman in charge of the Lakers. We saw Jerry Buss's collection of championship rings, which is kind of interesting. Also, former Lakers coach Phil Jackson's vision of heaven. Seriously, there's a video at marketplace.org.
Just final note on the way out today, a perhaps handy market glossary given the way Wall Street's been going of late. You will hear the word correction get thrown around a lot. That's a decline of an individual stock, but more often an index, like, say, the S&P, a decline of 10% from its recent high. And in fact, the S&P closed in correction territory today, as did the NASDAQ. The Dow was there for a while. But here's the really important part, because I feel like I can't say this often enough. This is normal. All right, we're out of here. Dow Industrial is off 245 today, just under 1%, about half its total loss of the day, actually. The NASDAQ dropped 116 points, 1.6%. S&P 500 down 17.6%. Our daily production team includes Bridget Bonder, Maria Hollenhorst, Sean McHenry, Daisy Palacios, and Phoebe Unterman. Our special projects desk is Tommy Andres and Eliza Mills. Caitlin Esch is the producer on our Wealth and Poverty desk. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.